Good afternoon and welcome. I'm Martin Mulcair and I'm on the Leadership Committee. So it is, my pleasure to greet you today for what, given crowd, should be fun, because this will be a lot more informal, a lot more of an opportunity to have a conversation than the lecture style that some of the past forums have looked like. You may be wondering what the catalyst was for a forum on mentoring. As usual, there are a few different things sparked the idea. Firstly, if you've been reading the President's views, Council's views, certainly the Leadership Committee's views, that for our membership, we're keen to promote a lot more emphasis on non-technical skills. And as you'll hear from our guest speakers, one way of really having a focus on non-technical skills is via mentoring. The second catalyst, again, you may be aware of some of the developments around the capability assessment tool, some work on CPD, and again, in that context, capability, CPD, we want to ensure that there's greater clarity about the value of mentoring and the fact that they would also be wonderful form of professional development. So they're the two primary catalysts. Plan for today, this is a game plan, that we've got two fabulous guest speakers. We're going to allow time at the end for some questions and comments. The flyer said we were wrapping up at 2 p.m. Past forums have wrapped up at 1:30. So this is the compromise situation. We'll draw formal proceedings to close at 1:30. So for people who do have to get back, then we'll deliver on that. For people who have allocated time until 2, we would love for you to stay, and depending on how many we've got, we may choose to continue in this form with question and answers, or we may do it informally and use the guest speakers in small groups in formal conversation. So we'll see what it looks like at 1:30. And if you've all left by then, that will be a hint for us. Logistics, we are recording this, so anything you say may be used against you. The important practical thing, though, is if we are going to be interactive, we are going to ask some questions, have some comments, you will need to use the microphone. So I'll try and play helper for that. Questions, concerns? Anybody found them in the wrong place? Well, without any further ado, let me introduce our first fabulous speaker. We have a very experienced financial services executive who's here to address us today. In terms of roles in the Institute, Andrew was past president of the Institute, 2005. And in terms of today's topic, Andrew was the inspiration driver of the formation of a leadership committee, and in particular, the formation of the Step Up program. And in the Step Up program, mentoring was a key element of that. And so I can't think of anybody better to talk about mentoring than Andrew Gale.
Thanks, Martin, and welcome all. It's great to see people keen on mentoring, which is a great passion of mine, I must say. As Martin said, given the size of the group, I think we'd probably get most value from today's session by making it interactive, so feel free at any stage. We'll have formal question things, but if something burning comes top of mind, then feel free. Okay, so we'll get underway. First of all, not surprisingly, I'd just like to state I'm actually a huge believer in the value of mentoring. I personally benefited from it at an early stage of my career, so I decided around about the age of 26, 27 that I wanted to actually transition from following a, if you like, traditional actuarial career to being involved in broader management. And the organisation I was then with, which was Lendlease MLC, was fantastic in that Lendlease believed in young talent and leadership talent and the like. And they gave me a pretty major role at that early stage of life, career, around 27. But the way in which they did it was they actually teamed me up with a guy who was a state manager at the time, Struthers Cairns, who was 62, and he had 35 years of street smarts behind him. So I had all the, you know, like the actuarial training and the MBA and what have you. But I tell you what, being teamed up with a guy who had 35 years of street smarts and working closely with him for 12 months as I transitioned into these broader roles was invaluable. So it's something I found terrific. I've mentored people a fair bit, either formally or informally over the years. So we've got a few people here from Deloitte, but I mean, somebody like James Hickey, who's now sort of a star partner at Deloitte. James and I had a close working relationship. I've mentored a couple through the Step Up program. So, you know, I'm a true believer. and so it was when we were looking at through the leadership committee and designing a leadership development program, and we looked at what are the best programs which exist internationally in Australia or in other professions, Leadership Victoria, etc. One of the common themes in them is if you're focused on your personal development and leadership, then mentoring is a key part of that. Now, how do I get rid of this? We've got a mouse wheel here somewhere. There we go, good. Master of the technology. Okay, so why mentoring? First of all, the bit of a history lesson for those of you who are interested. The origin of the word mentor comes from Homer's Odyssey. So when Odysseus, if I get the Greek pronunciation correct, Odysseus, when he decided to go to the Trojan Wars, he wanted to make sure that his son, Telemachus, was well cared for. So he asked an ancient noble gentleman called Mentor to look after him. And what happened was that the goddess Athena, goddess of wisdom, she actually took the form of Mentor, and she was the one who gave guidance through Mentor to Telemachus whilst they were off fighting the Trojan Wars. So that's the origin of mentoring, if you're interested. In terms of anybody, I think this applies pretty much at any stage of your career, whether it's early stage, mid, or advanced. I think the best personal growth opportunities, the development opportunities occur when you actually go for stretch goals. And those stretch goals might be either career stretch goals or they might be personal stretch goals. So certainly when I've worked with people, like in professional services and the like, and you're working out your own personal plan, I always work on the principle of having three stretch goals. And they're the goals which actually take you outside of your comfort zone. Right outside your comfort zone. When I was involved there in those early stages, moving into the distribution side of the industry and out of actuarial, yes, that took me outside my comfort zone. I was out working with agency managers who were in their mid-50s, and I was 27, relatively inexperienced in those areas. And yes, I was absolutely outside my comfort zone. But where you go through the most development, the most stretch, is when you put yourself in that circumstance. But where it works best, as shown in this diagram, is when you go put yourself in those situations with the assistance of a more capable peer or somebody who can provide you with guidance. So if you go for stretch, supported by somebody who can provide you with guidance, development, support, that is when you go through the best growth opportunities. Why go through mentoring? Just a bit of the rationale behind it. If you think about learning and development and what you gain through various alternative mechanisms, training courses and books and the like, which is sort of developing some base critical skill sets, that's about 10% of your learning and development. If you look at the feedback that you get either in your personal life or in a career circumstance or the role models that you look at, that's actually where about 20% of your learning and development comes from. But about 70% actually comes from experience, on-the-job opportunities, but actually getting involved in doing things. And what mentoring does is it helps you address the second or third areas around competencies and behaviours. So some of you are looking around the room, relatively early stage in your professional careers. This is a marvellous opportunity and a good time for you, I think, to be thinking about mentoring. In terms of the sort of feedback and engagement that you might get from working with other people, if you think about three groups of people, friends, mentors and directors, and three attributes, trust, value and tension. Now, if you interact with your friends and get feedback and the like, trust level, high. The value, especially if it's a good open relationship, that should be high as well. In terms of creative tension, in terms of you actually doing something and the like, low, typically. If I go to the other end of the spectrum, directors, so these are people might be in your work situation who are directing your work, trust, I hope this isn't too much of a generalisation, but if you haven't built a strong rapport and the like, it's not necessarily at a high level, and especially if they're highly directive in their behaviours. The value that they might provide, especially if their management style is directive, could be low. And tension could be low, could be high. Depends on the circumstance. The point I want to bring out here is mentors rate highly across all those areas. If you develop a strong, trusting relationship with a mentor, there'll be high trust, there'll be high value. But part of the nature of a mentoring relationship is that there is a degree of accountability there. And I'll talk a bit more about that, which means that there is actually a strong creative tension in terms of you pursuing some of your growth goals. I'm going to talk briefly about emotional intelligence, not to get too far off the track of mentoring, but the reason I want to go through emotional intelligence is that I see elements of this as being sort of foundational to what a mentoring relationship could and ideally should look like. So a quick overview of emotional intelligence, or EI, pioneered, as you see there, by Daniel Goleman, and helps individuals to determine how appropriately and effectively they apply their knowledge. So there's two basic concepts. They're sort of being intelligent. Everybody in this room is intelligent. And that's how you apply your knowledge and analytic capability and the like. But then there's the whole issue about being emotionally astute and the expression of your capabilities and the like, and that's what EQ helps you to address. Expanding on that further, if you could think about your career success, if that's important to you, it's important to most of us. It might be career success, it might just be success in your personal life. If you look at the attribution of that, actuaries love doing attribution. If you look at the attribution of that, 1% of that comes from IQ. Emotional intelligence, 27%. Other factors, opportunity, organisation, industry, a whole bunch of things, the other explanatory elements. The other way I've heard it expressed is that if you look trying to attribute success between IQ and EQ, 95% of that is actually explained by EQ. Now, I just can't overemphasise, if you're interested in your personal success in your life and success in your career, developing mastery around emotional intelligence and EQ type dimensions is absolutely vital. And most people at an early stage, we've all been through it, especially when you're relatively fresh out of, you know, university part threes and the like, is a lot of the skilling has been taking advantage of the IQ type elements and the analytic skills and stuff like that. And the next stage of development, and it's a lifelong development, is working on the EQ side of things. So why do I mention that? If I just talk through the EI framework, emotional intelligence, it sort of broadly breaks out into two components. There's a whole set of competencies, skills around personal competence, and then ones around social competence. I'm not going to go through all of these, but the starting point with emotional intelligence is actually around self-awareness. So self-awareness is being emotionally self-aware, having self-insight, being open and honest with yourself in terms of where you're at, your strengths, your weaknesses, assessing those in a realistic manner. Sometimes it's not even strengths and weaknesses. Sometimes it's just a style type issue and getting insights into what is your particular style and how might that be best deployed. There's a whole series of skills around self-management, emotional self-control, transparency, adaptability. And then there's the set of skills around social competence. The reason I go through all this is I think it's really important in a mentoring relationship that a large part of that is sort of related back to this emotional intelligence framework. And when you're interacting with a mentor, that they are placing a large amount of the focus on your development as an individual and how you, and the, their contribution to your development using this sort of construct. Typically, the first starting point is around the self-awareness. There's a sort of a logical sequence for these things. There's any number of tools out there which can be used for you to start getting a better self-insight. One, for example, is what's called the Myers-Briggs tool. So the Myers-Briggs tool basically looks at doing some profiling of people on four key dimensions. So one of them is, you know, where do you sit on the introversion, extroversion scale of things? So that's the first dimension. And introversion, extroversion isn't what people commonly understood. Introverts are people who source their energy from within. Extroverts are people who source their energy from interacting with other people. So it's sort of externally driven. So it's not the typical classification of introvert, extrovert. There's this, you know, a dimension between intuition and sensing in terms of how you go about decision-making and thought processes. Another dimension is thinking and feeling. And then the other one is how you go about making judgments, making decisions, which is on a perceiving judgment type dimension. Now, I'm not going to get too driven on that particular tool, but it's just one tool you can use. And taking those four dimensions, as you know, there's be 16 combinations, 2^4, in terms of 16 different profiles. And it's just a simple way of you starting to get a sense of, what style am I? Now, I know, for example, one of the guys I mentored in the Step Up program back in 2009, he went through this, he got some really useful insights, and he decided, which was quite correct, I think, in terms of the way he went about his career and his personal life, that he would focus on capitalising on his strengths, great way to approach things, and in terms of his weaknesses or areas of development, just be realistic about those and say, OK, when I work with teams, I'll look for people who are strong in those areas so they complement my style. And I was just having that self-insight in terms of how you went about things. So I spend a little bit of time on emotional intelligence, but the reason is I think it's actually foundational to the way a mentor could or should go about a relationship with you. Actuarial mentoring program, why mentor? Maybe obvious, but to go through it, it does accelerate, absolutely, professional and career development. It leads to improved performance, actually, for both parties. So the mentee benefits enormously from it. The mentor does as well. It's very fulfilling being a mentor. You actually need to think deeply about certain issues if you're going to be effective in that role. It's beneficial for both. It's a marvellous opportunity for reflection and evaluation. For example, using that EI sort of development framework. How many of us actually sit back and take the time to reflect on our style and what we want to achieve in life and just go through that period of reflection? It doesn't... You do?
Yeah.
It happens too infrequently, doesn't it? I had a marvellous opportunity earlier this year. I had a bit of a gardening leave I needed to take earlier this year. So I actually had a couple of months for doing reflection. And I found it marvellous in terms of working out the next chapter of my life and what I want to do and contribute. But you actually need to find the opportunity to go through and pause and do reflection and to do some of that sort of self-insight. And a mentoring relationship can help that process along. You do form, typically, a mentoring relationship is a relationship of high trust. It only really works when the mentee is happy to be very open, really open. And transparent about themselves. And by definition, that means a high trust type relationship. I won't go through all of these. It's obviously useful getting another person's perspective. I've used the expression there, an old head on young shoulders. So if you can get the benefit of someone who's got experience and got insight and make that available. Two others just to mention... I think one of the great benefits of mentoring is that it actually helps keep you on track. It's almost like having a project manager working with you, because typically what you end up doing is sitting down, agreeing some development needs, agreeing some actions and things like that. But there's sort of this accountability now to a mentor, and it just means you get things done to a much greater extent than if you just relied on your own energies. Okay, some desirable traits for mentors. All of us have got the opportunity to be mentors. I must say, with the leadership program, for example, there's a huge willingness, and we'll come on to this later on, there's a huge willingness of people in the profession to be mentors and to contribute. I know when we were designing the leadership program, over 80% of the people we asked to be available through a mentor panel agreed with enthusiasm, absolute enthusiasm. So we'll come back to that issue. Some of the desirable traits for mentors, obviously approachable, trustworthy and welcoming. Yeah, so that they share their own information and their experiences very openly, the opportunity to see the big picture. You can read a lot of this stuff, but we've got people on the line. Have the people on the line got these slides, by the way? If there's anyone on the telephone line, do we know? Don't know.
There's
okay.
One potential dial-in, and I don't know what
you're talking about. Okay, fine. Sensitive to needs, you obviously need to allocate the time. We'll come back to this later on in terms of the commitment required in a good mentoring relationship, but there does need to be the commitment on time. The whole style, the nature of our mentoring relationship is not directional. It is not directing behaviour. It is actually providing guidance, it's support, it's motivation. It's not directive. It's actually different to coaching as well. That's the nature of the relationship. It should trigger that self-awareness process that I talked about. And a good mentor provides accurate, open feedback. So the feedback should be frank, obviously not done in a hurtful way, not done in a constructive way, but it should be very open feedback. That's what is most useful between a mentor and a mentee. Desirable traits for mentees. First one, absolutely critical. If you're the mentee, you actually need to take accountability for driving the process. It's up to you to be thinking about what some of your desires and goals are. It's up to you to be scheduling the time with a mentor. You need to be taking accountability for that. If you aren't going to care for you, then who will? Obviously need to be motivated, want to develop a good relationship. Critically, you know, listen and accept guidance and feedback. Sometimes if we get feedback, if it's not exactly what we like or may not align with our self-perceptions or whatever, there can be a tendency towards sort of defensive type behaviour, defending it. You don't need to. It's great just to receive the feedback openly with the good intent with which it's shared in a mentoring relationship and use it. Part of the mentoring process will involve goal setting. We'll talk about that in a sec. They need to be realistic. Obviously needs to be a high degree of reliability exhibited by the mentee. And initiative and enthusiasm. So there's some desirable traits for mentees. In terms of an engagement process, I think Gloria's going to talk a little bit about, you know, how one finds mentors and mentees finding each other and the like, so I'll leave that to Gloria. Once you actually do it, though, the early stages of a mentor-mentee relationship will involve sort of a context-setting phase. So you do need to go through rapport building, building trust, getting to know each other. Just understanding what's going to be the shared sort of accountability, the contracting relationship, if I can use that expression, between a mentor and mentee. So just getting a shared understanding of how you're going to work together. Introducing what's called the GROW model and then starting to work out some timetabling. GROW model, not particularly complicated. That's just goals, reality checks in terms of the goals, that they're realistic goals in the first place and that the time frames around them are realistic. Talking about options. So some of these, as I say, once you start in this mentor-mentee type relationship, part of the goals and the like will focus around some specific things you might do in a work context or in a career context. Some of them will actually be in a personal development context. So we'll cover all those. And then you'll go through an iterative type process. And that's my sort of overview and introduction to mentoring. Gloria is now going to share some of her insights, except I think Martin, we're going to just pause for maybe some questions at this stage, and then you can do your introductions for Gloria.
Thank you, Andrew.
You're going to be my beautiful assistant. And we thought...
I'll be your assistant.
Rather than saving all the questions up and just having a bit of a pause for comments, questions now before I introduce Gloria. Alex. Can you need to give it to Alex, though. Sorry.
Thanks, Andrew. That was a really interesting talk. Couple of quick questions. First one, could you elaborate on the link between mentoring and the 70% when you were talking about 70% job training experience, 20% role models and feedback, and 10%? I can see the link with the 20%. I'm just trying to see the link with the 70%.
Right, okay. Gloria will talk to this to a certain extent. When you're choosing a mentor, the mentor might either work within the organisation that you're currently working in, and there's advantages and some disadvantages to that, so you can argue that both ways, but a lot of the mentoring type relationships will naturally occur within organisations just because of the nature of working closely together. So in that regard, a lot of your learning will actually occur on the job, and it's the shared information which occurs in that sort of situation. If I take something like the Step Up program, which was designed with a mentoring component, a large part of the Step Up program was actually that people would choose a project to work on where they could make a difference. So now, as it turned out, about 70-75% of those ended up being sort of projects in either a community sense or not-for-profit type sense, you know, Black Dog, Indigenous education, a whole bunch of things. But part of the learning experiences, if you like, was learning on the job with those projects and getting the feedback from the mentor relating to those specific projects. So it's actually when you can relate the sharing of the mentor's experience and insights and wisdom pertaining either to challenges in a work situation or it might be outside work, but some sort of project where you're involved.
We'll take one more from Alex before we...
Then the second question, which I think relates to that point that you're making there, is you did mention that mentoring and coaching are different things. So could you elaborate on the differences there, particularly as pertains to what you were just saying in terms of job experience and linking it to actual tangible things?
Okay. I was going to comment on this briefly a little bit later, but I'll cover it now. It's a subtle difference, but if you think about a swimmer, and how they get coached into lifting their levels of performance. A lot of it is working on, obviously, technique, drill for skill, all those sorts of things. A lot of it is highly directive, the nature of the relationship. You take just about any sporting context. If there's a coaching relationship, a lot of it's very skill-orientated, and it's directive-type behaviour. To me, the difference in mentoring is... that it's a lot of the responsibilities on the mentee in the first instance. It's giving guidance and direction and asking open questions and the like. It's actually trying to help the recipient of that advice go through a self-discovery process. So it actually doesn't involve providing the answers. It's not drill for skill on skilling. It's trying to ask the questions which help people go on a journey of self-discovery. So it's a subtle difference, but it's an important one. It's less directive and it's more encouraging people to learn, obviously sharing experiences along the way which guide people on that path, and it's a difference in approach.
Right, thank you, Andrew. So I'm sure there are other questions. We will give you an opportunity, but I thought we'll just get some burning ones out there. So our next guest speaker, the idea to give a personal and also practical perspective from the mentee side of the draw. So our next guest, Gloria Yu, is a director at Deloitte. In terms of involvement with the Institute, she is a member of council. She's also a member of too many committees to list here, including the leadership committee. So in the context of today, Gloria was involved in the Step Up program and hence was subjected to a mentoring program. Please welcome Gloria Yu.
Thanks, Martin. So like many of you, I've sort of heard about and read about the importance of mentoring for a long, long time. But I didn't really actively seek it out. I didn't know what it would actually mean to me, how useful it might be, and importantly, if I really want to have a mentor, how am I going to find a mentor in the first place? So I'm going to share with you my own personal experience and take you on a bit of a journey with me. A journey of transformation, and you'll notice some common themes between my talk and Andrew's talk as well. And at the end, I'm going to share with you some of the ways that you can find a mentor practically. So the before and after shots. This is the before, obviously. Looking back, I had lots of advisors since I started work, people I'd go to if I had issues or problems, but I didn't have a formal mentor as such. As Martin and Andrew alluded earlier, my first formal mentor was through the Step Up program. That was a few years ago now. And essentially, as part of that Step Up program, mentoring was one aspect. And we were allocated a mentor based on an allocation or matching process. So we had a bit of a think about what we want to achieve out of a mentoring relationship. And then we were also given some background information about the mentors themselves. So I didn't know what to expect in the first place. So mixed feelings, a bit confused as to what it actually involves, but at the same time quite excited because I know it is something good. It's the actual mentoring experience that really transformed me from being unsure about mentoring to being an advocate of mentoring. So having that determination, like a Kung Fu Panda, I suppose. And since the Step Up program concluded, I've had a couple of other people as my mentors, and I've also mentored somebody as well. So hopefully you too will be able to go on this journey of transformation and have a mentoring experience and reap the many benefits, which I certainly found very valuable. So benefits. I found mentoring to be a fantastic networking opportunity. It's a great way to know someone you respect in the industry much more deeply, understand how they come from where they are today, and what is their route, what's their path, and you really have an access to a role model in the profession. I found it extremely useful to bounce ideas around, whether it's technical issues or people issues, all within bounds of confidentiality, of course. So issues of work, you'll be surprised, actually, how similar personality types, people problems or politics are across all organisations. And so my mentor was great at shedding a light on what are the motivations of people, what are the approaches I actually take in approaching these situations. And I really learned a lot from his wealth of experience. And my mentor was indeed a human sounding board, which was today's title. We shared about what are the situations I'm experiencing at work, what are the problems, what are the tricky items that I didn't know how to go about approaching, and what I did, what others did, and then I'd receive very frank feedback in terms of what I did well and what are the areas I could improve on. And I really appreciated those constructive feedback. But most importantly, my mentor asked me a lot of questions. Questions about what drives me as a person. What I find fulfilling in life. What I find fulfilling in my career. What would actually make me happy? What would frustrate me? And through this process, I actually learned a lot about myself. I improved my self-awareness. And it helped me sharpen and refine my career goals, both short-term as well as a longer-term. I was inspired and challenged to think through issues which I wouldn't have thought so. And I guess that's the beauty of having a mentor who's from a slightly different background, who is from a different practice area, and who could really show you some fresh perspectives on the same issue at hand. And so it broadened my lens and widened my exposure. And at each meeting, we'd decide on what kind of goals I'd be achieving in the next meeting. And in between meetings, I'd go away and do those action items, the practical, actionable, and measurable items, And so that by the next meeting, I can come back to my mentor and tell him, you know, how's my progress against the goals I've set in the previous meeting. So mentoring is certainly a great way to hone in the communication skills and the interpersonal skills. So that's my experience. A few tips to the future mentees. I had a fantastic mentoring relationship, and to me, mentoring was one of the key successes of the Step Up program. As I reflect back on the mentoring side, though, I must say I know lots of mentoring relationships that worked really well. At the same time, there are some that didn't work as well. And there are many reasons to that. Obviously, a key one is if either party or both parties are too busy and they didn't have enough time to actually spend together. But I think a good match between mentor and mentee is absolutely crucial. If their mentor and mentee click or get along well, the chances of a mentoring relationship working well is much higher. And I don't mean to say you should judge on the first impressions of whether you click with your mentor or not. By that I mean you should really give it a good go, say 6 months, where you meet every fortnight or once a month, and you really spend time with each other, because it does take time to know each other and build rapport with each other. And I guess if it still doesn't work after 6 months, it's all right to actually close the mentoring relationship, because it's probably in the interest of both parties just to end it. And it's fine, because everyone's busy, so you might as well just draw it to a close and not waste each other's precious time. Be open and honest. There is no point hiding your weaknesses. Your mentor is there to help you and to guide you. You'll probably feel a bit vulnerable as you sort of describe the tricky situations you're encountering at work, but that's why trust and confidentiality are so crucial. And you need to establish it up front so that every single time within that mentoring meeting, you're comfortable that whatever you shared within that meeting stays within those four walls. And if you're really concerned about talking about your weaknesses, perhaps in your choice of the mentor, someone in your direct reporting line at work might not be a good idea. Agree how often you'd like to meet and what you'd like to achieve through mentoring. Expect to be asked questions about what drives you. Expect to be challenged. And you would have to do a bit of homework, so to speak, in between meetings. But it's well worth it, because that's how you actually learn and grow. When you're given constructive feedback, again, be open to it. It might not feel that great when people sort of critique you, but I've come to realize and appreciate that it actually takes courage for someone to critique you, and it's much easier for someone to say nice things to you than to say the hard word that you need to hear. So appreciate and value those. Take initiative. Set up those meetings. It might mean you ringing up your mentor's PA to organize those meetings. And thank your mentor. I always find it incredible that your mentors would be extremely busy and they still take the time out to spend with you. So it's only right for us to thank them and also just do the simple things of organizing meetings. Like I said at the beginning, mentoring is a journey. It's a journey of knowing yourself, and it is a journey of challenging yourself. It is your career. Your mentor is there to guide you, to help you along the way, and to challenge you. But let's be honest, mentoring is not the silver bullet to all your life's problems and issues. Have a realistic expectation of mentoring, and really take ownership of your career. So, how do you find a mentor? Lots of ways to find a mentor, and there's no one-size-fits-all model. And what I'm going to suggest here are some simple, practical suggestions, and by no means are they an exhaustive list. First and foremost, think about what you want to achieve in a mentoring relationship. You need to know yourself. Think back to the self-awareness piece that Andrew touched on earlier. Who are the types of people you get along well with? Do you prefer to work with people who are quieter, people who are more reflective? Or do you prefer to work with people who are more direct or a bit more dominating in their style? What are your aspirations? Is it a new skill you want to acquire? Is it technical skills? Is it management skills? Is it people skills or the softer skills? Or do you want to see how you can change from one area to another, whether you want to move from, say, general insurance to enterprise risk management, or whether you want to move from a traditional actuarial role to move to a product area or even into a management area? For example, if you want technical skills, you're probably better off finding a mentor who's not the CEO of a company. I think there's often a myth that the senior the mentor is, the better he or she is. And I think you can see from the example I just gave that that's not necessarily the case. It doesn't mean that a CEO is necessarily better for you as a mentor than, say, a manager or senior manager. Each person has their own unique strengths and weaknesses and perspectives that you can learn from, whether it's the CEO, senior manager, or the manager itself. And we need to move away from the mindset that we must find the highest possibly ranked person to be our mentor. And depending on who your mentor is, you might be able to do a bit of reverse mentoring as well. So that basically means you can share your perspectives and your insights from a mentee's view, for example, on the latest technology or the latest industry techniques. And it becomes both ways direction where you learn from each other in your mentoring relationship. Do your research. Identify who might be possible and suitable to help you achieve your goals in your life and career. For example, if you're looking to change your career directions, you might want to find someone who's been there and done that, so you can learn from his or her war stories, the tips, or simply follow their footsteps. Think broadly about your networks, and I guess you can loosely divide them into two categories, work and non-work. Is there anyone at work that can be suitable? Obvious benefits is that they understand the dynamics within your company, they know who are the important people, what kind of style people are like, what are the potential internal opportunities that they might come across and they can refer them to you, what are the politics. So think about your own team. Think about who you currently work with directly. Also think about people you sit around but you don't work with directly. Think about who might be from a consulting firm, who might be just seconding in your company that you might get along well with and they've got skills that you really admire. Or could it be someone from your previous workplace? Could it be someone you met at an industry conference or at an institute event? Then think about networks outside of work. Could it be someone you met over a barbecue on the weekend? Remember, a mentor doesn't necessarily mean that they must be an actuary. In fact, if you want to learn, say, sales skills, you're probably better off not having an actuary as your mentor. And once you've identified a mentor, you might want to find someone you know to refer you to that person. Otherwise, and I know this can be hard, it doesn't come naturally to most of us, take courage, introduce yourself, and just ask that person. Ask them whether they'd be happy and willing to be your mentor. You can do it in person, you can give them a ring, or even drop them an email. But my point is, just ask. Often we are the ones ourselves holding us back. Bit of thick skin helps. But the worst that can happen is if they say no. But most of the time, you'll be pleasantly surprised that people are generally very willing and happy to be your mentor. So hopefully you've got some insights from my perspective as a mentee. I think I'm going to hand over to Andrew to give you his perspectives from a mentor side as well.
Thank you, Gloria.
Yeah, we thought that to stimulate the conversation and the questions that I'm having heard Gloria's personal story, that if we gave Andrew another minute or two to give his personal experience, that might be helpful. And then we'll throw to questions and comments. So listen for what's the same and especially what's different from Andrew's version to Gloria's.
Just before doing that, a slight digression. I was reading the Financial Review magazine from last Friday, and there's a profile on the guy who's the CEO of the most successful investment bank in Australia. What do you think is the most successful investment bank in Australia at the moment? Yep, UBS. Okay, so if you look at the last 10, 15 years rankings, UBS actually by a fairly significant margin. Now, that's UBS is headed up by a guy called Matthew Grounds. There's the UBS team. But it was interesting reading through the profile of Matthew and how he's emerged into his current role. He's an absolute rainmaker, star contributor. But it actually talks about his early stage career and working with a guy called Chris Mackay, who he's got a lifelong relationship with. Bill Guthrie, who ended up being chairman of SBC Warburg, which morphed into UBS. Both of those playing a mentor role with Matthew Grounds when he's sort of in his mid-20s, and it sort of acknowledges. So here you've got a guy who's described by James Packer as rock star status in investment banking, but where it's acknowledged that the value of a mentoring experience at that early stage in his career. So I'll throw that one in. Okay, personal tips based on experience. Mentors and mentees need to be equally engaged. We talked about the mentee in particular needing to really be proactive, but you need this mutual commitment, enthusiasm and engagement from both parties if it's going to work. Part of that is, at an early stage, agreeing if what I call rules of the road. How frequently are we going to catch up? What's the nature of the interaction, the degree of openness, if we're talking about certain actions, the accountabilities, that you agree the rules of the road up front, so there's a common understanding. Mentees, as I say, needs to be really proactive. The one I worked with, for example, were the first stage of the step-up program with Gloria, which was Hugh Karp, and Hugh was terrific. He was always on the ball, lining up the meetings, following through on things, and it worked really well. I think by nature it does mean fairly frequent interaction, and that may vary depending on whether it's a work-related mentor or an outside work mentor. But I'd say it's certainly at least monthly. I mean, it might be more frequent than that if it's a work context, but it is fairly frequent interaction. Where it works best, in my experience, for both personal experience and seeing others, you are absolutely talking about a trusted relationship. It's very open. It's non-judgmental. That's the nature of a mentoring relationship. And part of that means for the mentee to get the most out of it, they just need to be extremely open. The stretch goals we talked about, in my view, we saw this with a lot of the community programs, mentees going in and approaching CEOs of not-for-profit organisations who they've never had dealings with before, saying, I've got some ideas and I think I can contribute, think I can help making the call. That's taking people outside their comfort zone. I've talked about the strong emotional intelligence framework. Part of this means that, to me, in the mentoring-mentee relationship, and this is where it's different to supervision, different to coaching, a lot of the focus is actually about personal development. It's the sort of insights that you get through self-awareness and how you'd like to develop as an individual, or where and how you'd like to make a contribution, or how you might like some of your relationships, either your business relationships or your personal relationships, to change. But it means a large part of the discussion is actually about you, the mentee, rather than just about activities and initiatives. That's a large part of the focus. So that may be some of my insights. Just reinforcing what Gloria said, in my view, a question mark on people's minds is always, if I make the approach, how will it be received? Most people who get approached to be a mentor, I found are really willing, they're really enthusiastic. And as I say, in the Step Up program, we found a really strong response rate. I'm going to leave you with two quotes to think about, because to me, embarking on embracing a mentoring relationship, it's a brave decision, because it means bearing yourself and being open about yourself. That's not an easy thing to do. But this is one of my favourite quotes: "Whatever you can do or dream you can, begin it. Just do it. Boldness has got genius, power, and magic." And then the other thing, and we found this through the Step Up program, is that once you decide to commit to a certain course of action, whether it's through a mentoring relationship, through some of those stretch goals, the things you can achieve in life, the things which take out just outside your comfort zone, it's amazing. All of a sudden, things start moving in your favour. It's almost as if there's some unseen forces which move you in that direction. So, leave you with those thoughts, and we'll open it up to Q&A.
Gloria, you might like to join Andrew at the microphone. Questions, comments? Don't be shy. Limited amount of time. Thank you, Katie.
Hi, I think it was interesting, Andrew, that you said one of the first mentors you had was someone senior in the business. Mm. I think looking at my situation, I don't think there's anyone in my local office who I could kind of open up this sort of relationship with, just because there's so much that's going on and conflicts of interest and reporting chains, all that sort of thing. Did you ever have any issues using someone in the business as a mentor, or was it more sort of learning on the job, work experience type?
Yeah, that one, and I was making the transition from an actuarial career. I was in corporate simulation and into distribution and advice side of the industry, which, you know, I was realistic enough to know I didn't know, you know, a huge amount about that. So it was more in a work type context. I think this sort of reinforces what Gloria said. You need to think about what your particular desires and aspirations are. A work-related mentor can add lots of value, especially if it's close to where you work or a line type management situation. I think there's always a bit of the question about how entirely open can you be? Can you bare your soul in a situation where there's line management involved? I think people always feel to a certain degree a degree of vulnerability in doing that. So I think it depends on where you want the skilling development. It might be someone elsewhere in the organisation, but maybe not in a line role that you want to tap into there. But you know, there's choices outside work, there's choices outside the profession. That doesn't have to be an actuary.
Who'd like to follow that? Jazz, you're involved in the people business.
Yes. I guess not so much a question, but a statement or an observation. There's a point made regarding, you know, not discounting the street intelligence, the experience, and having recently made that, not recently, about a year ago, it may sound like an advertisement, but it's not. Having made the transition from being an actuary in the life insurance sector into recruitment, I've had the privilege of working with a colleague who's been in recruitment for 32 plus years, and that it's almost a mentoring kind of relationship, and you can't discount the experience that people have and the, you know, the traction they gain from that. So I'd encourage you all to seek, amongst other things, experience amongst your potential mentors.
Just as a sign of willingness, by the way, of mentors, I've had discussions recently with some of the senior actuaries, including there's a past president's dining group, which happens every few months or so. So you've got, you know, some of the most senior actuaries in the profession who are saying, because we've been thinking about people who are sort of mid-stage in career in terms of being an actuary and significant managerial leadership type responsibilities, and say, where do people like that go to for mentoring support? I mean, you know, mentoring doesn't just occur in early stage career, and so there can be people stepping up to some significant management and leadership responsibilities, and more so. There's a group there of really senior, you know, astute people in the profession who are more than happy to be mentors at a more senior level as well.
Another opportunity. Angela.
Just a comment following from Jazz's one about street smart, and also like related to Andrew's comment about stretching yourself, because when I was looking for a mentor at the beginning of this year, I was specifically looking for someone who was who had a different working style to me, because I thought that's where I could learn the most things. Like, I'm rather quieter in my working style, so I thought if I was going to be working with someone in that similar style, it's not going to push me in the area that I want to go. So, yeah.
And I guess, Angela, that's a great point, because it comes back to what you actually want to achieve. And the fact that you actually deliberately go out to find someone who's different shows that you have really thought about it. And that's part of the self-awareness and knowing what you want to get out of a mentoring relationship.
Now, it's an interesting observation, because Gloria talked about the importance of match. But, yeah, choosing someone who's got some differences may be suitably challenging. Another question, comment. Oh, thank you, Katie.
I don't actually know that much about the Step Up program, so maybe someone could, you know, talk about what it actually means. I'm kind of getting the picture that there's actually some volunteer institute members who are offering to be mentors.
Sorry, Martin or Gloria?
Do you
want to
elaborate, Martin?
Okay, I'll put leadership committee hat on. There are two cohorts of Step Up program. There isn't one currently operating. And part of the catalyst here was to encourage mentoring to the broader membership. And whilst this was a point for the end, I'll mention it now. Leadership Committee is, at the moment, designing a broad framework for mentoring. Do not wait for that if you are keen to seek a mentor, but watch out for it if you think that some framework would be helpful for you. So there will be, stay tuned for more news. Thank you.
But one of the elements of that, apart from the mentoring, as I mentioned earlier with the Step Up program, was people just identifying an area in life where they can and would like to make a difference, broadly defined. Might be using their actuarial skills, it may not be. People ended up doing a whole diversity of projects. But I think the vast majority of people found that enormously fulfilling, is to identify just some area, and a lot of them end up being community-related, where you can make a difference. And that's a fantastic growth experience. What are the areas which you feel passionate about? Get involved, that boldness, you know, step into it, and that can be part of the development path. And if you do that in conjunction with the mentoring, it can sort of really accelerate the development.
Yeah, okay. Well, if you promised 1:30, but you've got one more. Everybody here can hear you, but the recording won't.
This is just around the practicalities. I mean, every relationship has a useful life, and after that it starts to seem like, well, you know, maybe we should cut it off. So just, you know, if you guys have any experiences, and if you've changed mentors during your career, if you felt like, you know, you reached a pinnacle of what you could get out of that relationship.
I guess as part of the Step Up program, because the nature of the program is 1 year, so we sort of, most of us pretty much kept our mentoring relationship to that 1 year. And I guess it really comes down to what you decide at the beginning up front with your mentor, because that's when you actually set up your expectations of how often you want to meet and how long you want that relationship to end, or to last, should I say. And I guess it also depends on whether you feel that it's working. If it's working really well after that 1 year, you can definitely keep going until a stage where you both feel that it's time to end this, to finish it, and then you can move on to learn from a different mentor as well. So it comes back to setting expectations up front and also talking about it throughout the mentoring program.
Thank you, Gloria. I did promise that we'd wrap up formally at about 1:30. Thank you very much for coming along today. If it sounded like an advertisement, a promotion for mentoring, that's because it was. As you heard, we're all believers, and the idea was not just to endorse, but to give you, as you, I hope you've heard, some practical experience and some practical tips. Said we're keen not only to encourage, but also to provide some support via a program, maybe program is the wrong word, but a framework in the future. So a message then I hope you picked up is the value on many dimensions of a mentoring relationship, either as a mentor or as a mentee. And if you are suitably inspired, then we encourage you to go out and do something about it soon. Please join me in thanking our guest speakers. So if you have to go, please feel free. You go with my blessing. If you'd like to stay, we can do some democracy here. But show of hands, who's got another 10, 15 minutes? Okay, if we're only about three people, would it make more sense to do a collective conversation and continue question and answer? Or would you rather, as everybody gets up, you can have a chat with Gloria, Andrew, me, informally, small groups? People, put your hands up. Stick with the current style. Hands up. Informal conversation? Okay, let's do that one. Okay, well, thank you very much for going. And if you want to stay for a chat, we're all ears. We've got till 2 o'clock.